हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So page 56. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Krishna has declared in the Bhagavad Gita that the worshippers of the demigods are not very intelligent. He is also, because intelligence means to understand the Lord, right? So if you're not intelligent, you're not seeing things in connection with the Lord. Not saying that they don't mechanically have good intelligence and can't mechanically do all kinds of things. But it's just like how intelligent is, let's say, your, you know, how you say, 12-cylinder Ferrari. Is it intelligent?
No.
But can it do a lot of things?
Yes.
So that's the Vedic consideration of intelligence. It's not the technically what is being able to be done. Intelligence, of course, is used, but that's just the mechanical aspect of intelligence. The real intelligence is discriminate between what's matter and what's spirit. So if you can't tell that is Krishna that's making things work, and you think the demigods are making it work, that means you're not very intelligent. Right? You know, it's just like if you go to Disneyland and you think Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck are making everything happen, you're not very intelligent. Is that what it is? Yeah. He has also declared that one has to give up all kinds of worship and simply concentrate on Krishna consciousness. Right? So, in Krishna consciousness, worship is being done, but it's not about the worship, it's about the Krishna consciousness. Right? So that's what it means, giving up all varieties of worship and just surrendering to Krishna. That means all the worship you do is just connected to Krishna. Otherwise, people do religious things because of the material benefit they'll get, and Krishna consciousness. But Krishna's saying, no, you give up that side and it's just to please Him. Krishna's invoking the anger of Indra and later on chastising him is a clear indication to his devotees that those who are engaged in Krishna consciousness have no need to worship any demigod, even if it is found that the demigod has become angry, right? Because Krishna will take care of it. Krishna gives his devotees all protection, and they should completely depend on his mercy. In his Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, "This pastime illustrates the mistake of thinking it is good to perform demigod worship, also the fault of thinking that I am the supreme, I am worshipable." Right, so these are all lasting things. So I am supreme, I am worshipable. These are the subtlest forms of I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Right? Because I'm supreme, so I'm the controller, I'm worshipable, I'm the enjoyer. Yes?
So we worship Krishna as the supreme in a general mood. But then specific, you know, some devotees, they worship particular demigods. Is that the fault we're talking about?
Yes. You know, unless we're talking about they're respecting Lord Shiva because he's a devotee of Krishna. You know, Sadashiva, then he's non-different. It's just Krishna in the mood of destruction, that's Sadashiva. But there's still a difference. He's coming from. Yogurt is the transformation of milk, so it's non-different, but you can still tell the difference. Milk's the origin, like that. So that, but if there's any other demigods, who would we be worshipping? You know what I'm saying? That would be the limit of it. Other than that, we wouldn't get involved.
Yeah, like people worshiping a Panchopasana, it's a standard Hindu worship.
Yeah, that we wouldn't do at all. That's Brahma Samhita already shows how Krishna is the origin of all that, how all that potency comes from there. Because these are just all the Panchopasana, just all the aspects of worship of the material energy, you know, within the modes. That's what you're worshipping in Panchopasana. So at least one's seeing, because whatever one does, that's controlled by the modes, and then if you are worshipping on that level, then you're seeing how the whole thing is connected together, you see the authority. But you're not actually seeing the Supreme, because they may say, no, but here we're worshipping Vishnu. But in Panchopasana, then generally those who worship, then they're just thinking that Vishnu is the highest form of the mode of goodness, not pure goodness. So the Satna Narayan worship and all that is not actually meant for in devotion. Because the point is you have to do things in devotion, but doesn't mean that you are being devotional. Right? Let's say you go to the office, and there's somebody there that has to sign your paper. Are you going to be nice? Yeah. Are you going to maybe take him some prasad? You know, are you going to, you know, say, you know, talk about his family? Right? You're going to do all those things. So you would say those are the same things you do in devotion. Right? But are you actually have a devotional mood towards that guy? No, not at all. It's just that he gets the work done. So therefore, anybody who wants to be successful in karma or jnana has to use bhakti to get it done. But as soon as they get what they want, the bhakti's given up. Right? Means, are you going to go back and visit that guy when it's not time to sign a paper? Not at all. You know, so that's what goes on in karma and jnana. Is they're using bhakti, so that's why it looks like it. So we can say, oh, but they're all, you know, so devotional, so this and that. Yes, but for what? That's the whole thing, is that the subtleties, when you get into there, then you have to be able to see what actually is devotion and what's not. Because if we only look at forms, then generally most kind of like traditional practicing Hindus look like fabulous devotees. But if you check and talk to them about what's the Supreme, then you'll generally see it's some kind of, you know, formless blob. You know, might be in the clouds, might be an om sight around it, you know, like that. And some kind of light, you know, something floating, like that. But that's about it. If you push. So even they're worshipping Krishna, worshipping Rama, because most Hindus all worship Krishna or Rama. And then other demigods are kind of underneath that. That's just to kind of make sure the household goes on nicely. But as far as the Supreme, most are either Rama or Krishna, depending upon the area, depending like this. So it's going to be that. But if you ask them, so what's the Supreme, you know, absolute, you know, then if they say, no, it's you know, Rama, Krishna themselves, what about, no, but most of them will say it's the Brahman. They're all impersonalists. They somehow or another have been, contaminated by the Mayavadis, that the Mayavadis say is that if you're not as advanced as them, that you can just meditate on nothing, which they can't. But they'll say then everybody else should use bhakti. They don't have a problem with the common people using bhakti. They'll preach it. Nishkam Karma Yoga. That's a big platform for them to preach to the common person. And so you use bhakti, but without attachment, and this and that, and so many things. So the people will do it with attachment, but they'll move towards detachment, depending on whether they're into karma or jnana. But bhakti is not actually part of the equation. But because they're using the form of bhakti, and they're worshipping Rama or Krishna, therefore they don't mind inviting us to programs, hearing for us, doing kirtan, taking prasad, because for them it's the same thing. They don't see that there's any difference. Right, so that's what it means by the eighth offense, to consider all these things equal. And so that's where they live, right? You know, eighth offense is their middle name, right? You know, so it's kind of like that's why. So because of that, they will be enthusiastic if we come, especially because we're a different show, right? They've seen all the guys with the beards and the this and the that, and then we come along and that, and we're different. So yeah, it'd be fun. Come over, you know, and that, but. And so they like it. They don't understand it's because of transcendence, while before it was just piety. So they're attracted to piety, but not to transcendental. Right? So they're doing transcendental activities, but they're not transcendental because the form is transcendental, but their purpose of them is material. So they're actually performing just the most pious material activities. Yes?
That sounds like karma mimamsa.
It's all mixed together. The point is all that's used very nicely by the Mayavadis. Because that's who preaches, you know. How much do we go out and preach?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, it's just like they just had the Cross Maidan. They did that after, you know, since Prabhupada did it, whatever it was, 40, 50 years ago. How often do we do these big pandals like that? They used to be common, standard. Now you don't hear about them so much. You know? So the thing is they only have that exposure, so then they're always going to deal in that way. But when the devotees come and they hear the philosophy, and if they're intelligent, then they start to catch that this is there. Then they'll take up the process of devotional service. They'll get that faith. They may be in the beginning a little Hindu Bindu and a little Hare Krishna, but with time then, by association, then they become devotees. They surrender, they take initiate, and then they're solid. And then for them, the sadhana is easy because that's what they've been doing their whole life. Right? Does that make sense? So their distraction is more money than anything else. Right? Like that. Because the culture they do, they follow that, and that gives the results. Well, the Westerners aren't very good with money, so therefore following pious activities also is that they don't connect the two together. They think, I will enjoy the senses. You know, I need money, so I'll try for money, but I won't get it by dharma, so they don't get the money and they don't get the sense gratification. So that's just sad, right? You know. So in other words, this pastime is to remove all of that. There's no need to do any of that. Why would they do that? Where would they get it from? Right? None of the four sampradayas do that. None. Right? So then that only leaves the smartas. You know, and the general Hindus. So otherwise, where would they get that? Because the general Hindus, I mean, festivals come up, they'll do those different things, but it's not organized so much as Panchopasana. Smartas will do Panchopasana. So, but even them, some of them focus on just one deity. Smartas are just worshipping the sun god, just worshipping Devi, just worshipping Shiva, just worshipping Vishnu, and they'll call themselves Vaishnavas. So we'll think they're the same, but actually they're not. They're like the caste Goswamis. They're performing the devotional activities, but it's not actually for pleasing Krishna. So other than worship of Lord Shiva as the greatest Vaishnav, then there shouldn't be any aspect of demigod, because Hanuman's not counted as a demigod. You know, he's part of the scene with... you have Sita, Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman. So that's kind of like the Ayodhya Panchatattva. you have the Jiva, you have the internal energy, you have the Lord, and then you have Lakshman, who represents himself and the Dvaitacharya. You know, so he'll have both those aspects. So he's part of that scene. So therefore, I mean, I can't think of anybody. The Shris won't even go near a demigod place. The Madhwas, seeing them, they'll offer obeisances, but they won't do any worship. Because Madhvacharya pointed out that in the Vedas, when it mentions all the demigods, the ahutis being offered to Indra or Vayu or Varuna or like this, those are just those aspects of Krishna. Krishna as the controller of the universe. Krishna as the lawgiver. Krishna as the knowledge, as the life. So therefore they'll respect them for that, but they won't do worship.
We don't perform demigod worship, but we respect demigods.
But we
respect demigods.
We respect them, but that doesn't mean we worship them.
No, but accepting the prasad of Ganesh and all, that's the part of respecting Ganesh.
Accepting which?
Prasad from Ganesh.
Accepting prasad from Ganesh, but who's done the puja?
Who's done the puja?
Yes, who's done the puja? There's Ganesh, you're having Ganesh prasad. Where, who did the puja that you have prasad, right? Because no puja, no prasad. Right? Who did the puja?
Pujaris.
And the pujaris are?
They are not devotees.
They're not devotees. So therefore, will Ganesh as a devotee accept the offering?
Logically, we should not.
Yeah, because the acharyas have forbade you to do it. That's why we don't do it. So therefore, they'd come up, give it to us. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. This and that. Mm-hmm. We put it in a bag and then we put it in the garden. Because the demigods, why would they accept? Why would a devotee accept these guys' offerings? Just like you make an offering, all their funny offerings to Shiva and Parvati. So they don't eat it. Who do they give it to?
The ghosts.
The ghosts. Yeah. So Ganesh, he has his rat. They got somebody to eat it. So you want rat prasad? Then go for it.
It's Ganesh's rat.
Hmm?
It's not an ordinary rat.
Yeah, but still. it's just like how you say? Silver is not an ordinary horse, right? So... Right? Yeah.
Okay. Is there this aspect of influence? Because either we want not to accept that Krishna is influencing everything, or that because by accepting that we're not going to be able to enjoy it, we then separate the influences out to all of these different other persons.
Yes, because if there's that aspect of ignorance, then you don't have to worry about it. You just want to enjoy, so knowledge messes up enjoyment. So that's one thing. I remember some second generation kids were complaining. It says, we don't know enough and we know too much. So we don't know enough to be fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, but we know too much to get into what the karmis are doing. So they're kind of stuck in the middle. Yeah. So it's. So this whole thing is yes. So you rationalize, you put the things like whatever it is that you do, then it makes it where it's not a problem. You don't mind. It's just practical. It's just this, that. That's the kind of thing. So that's why we use those terms. But in actuality, then it's not necessary. But you can see there's a lack of discrimination. Because by opening the door to these things, you open the door to what is just karma and jnana. That's pious, but you also open the door to karma and jnana that's not pious. In other words, all the Western, New Agey, and all the fads and everything like that, the political positions, everything like that. So both of these are, allowed. So those who accept all the modern things, though they themselves don't prefer the Vedic things, but they'll allow them to go on because it's the same position. It's the same mistake. Does that make sense? And you see it comes down to that will allow these things. You'll also see that the individuals within this, the stronger they are in this, the stronger their false ego is, that they are what they're doing is right, and they should be respected for that. Does that make sense? So this is all what is taken care of by this pastime. Because it's not, it's about that, what's wrong with this, or they'll quote material qualifications, or faults in others, or something like that. But it's not about how it pleases Krishna and how it's recommended by the acharyas, because none of this is recommended. Otherwise, why would Krishna have this pastime? Why would Gopal Bhatta Goswami, I have to say, the introduction to Satkriya Sardipika is huge. And all it is establishing worship of the demigods is a waste of time. Because if you're worshiping Shiva as a demigod, it's actually sinful. Any demigod worshiper actually is not a proper demigod worshiper, and they're all sinful. Like that. Because he points out there's 33 million demigods, and it takes all 33 million to make things work. Right? So we only will pick out the main ones, Panchopasana, or the eight main Dikpals, you know, like this, we'll pick out certain ones or a specific thing we want. But because they're a package, you have to worship all 33 million. How are you going to do that? Right? So if you're going to do all 33 million, why? And it's just in that generic sense, because they all have that potency. Where's the potency come from? Krishna. Therefore, worship Vishnu. So you do Vishnu puja, that already includes, because Vishnu has all the qualities. Those qualities have been empowered into the demigods by Krishna's arrangement. So therefore, by worshipping him, they're already taken care of. There's no need. Or if you're going to deal with them personally, how are you going to do 33 million demigod puja? It can never be done. So therefore, it's actually bogus. It's only given because people are going to be bogus anyway. So at least might as well be bogus within authority. But actually it's wrong. It's offensive. So why would the acharya spend so much time explaining this? And all the other acharyas accept this and mention it. And then we're so much smarter, we're so much more broad-minded. That's the false ego. I am supreme. So what I think, that's right. And I should be respected for that. So that has to go, because if you maintain that, you can be maintaining this on the Uttama platform. That's the danger of this one. Because where did we get the concept, I'm the controller and enjoyer? Did we get it within the modes of nature? No, we got it before the modes of nature. That means when we're on the Tathasta platform, we're on the liberated platform, at that time we picked it up. So that means we don't get rid of it now, we'll still have it then. It's not like, you know, it's just, you have to be aware, I have to give up, I'm the controller and enjoyer. Then giving that up, then one can progress. But otherwise, one will get stuck. Haridas Thakur points that out. We'll get into that later. But you can get stuck at that position before, you know, being in a spiritual body, in the spiritual world, between that point and, you know, you can get stuck there, between there and Krishna's pastimes, and get stuck there for hundreds of lifetimes. So it is possible. It's recommended one lifetime you do that here, one lifetime there in Braj. So therefore, it should move through very quickly. But you can get stuck because of this one specific thing. So if we cultivate that now, then that's part of our sadhana, part of our identity. So it will be there when you leave your body. Does that make sense? So what devotional attitude you have, that's what you'll have in your spiritual body. All that is you've changed from a material body to a spiritual body. From the material world to the spiritual world. So then you're going to carry on with that same mentality. It's not that it's changed. So that's why we have to be very careful. Otherwise you'll end up like the, you know, the yogic Brahmins, you know, or the wives of the Brahmins. Very advanced, but they still identified as Brahmins. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore it's not going to happen. Because who made the rule, marriage is between those of equal nature? Whose rule is it? Krishna's rule. So is that, so why would that rule be there? Because that's what Krishna likes. So Krishna practices that. So is he going to be out there with Brahmin ladies? He's playing the part of a Vaishya? No. Right? If he's in Gauranga Leela, is he marrying Brahmin ladies? Yes. Is he out dancing with Vaishya girls? No. Right? In Dwarka or in Ayodhya, then who's he marrying? He's a Kshatriya. Who's he marrying? Kshatriya girls. Because it just works so nicely. You know, here we have the illusion that love conquers everything like that. But the love conquers everything only gets you up to the point where they stop fighting and agree to be together. Maybe you'll end in a marriage scene if it's a little bit older style. Right? You don't see the next day. You don't even see the honeymoon that night. Like that? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole problem.
So then this is how it then spills out to all of these other...
Yeah, because you've allowed this, you've allowed this anartha to fructify. And so it can be, if you're more pious, you'll look for it within the Vedic tradition. And if you're less pious, you'll look for it within the modern tradition. Right? Because let's say we say New Age. Okay, we're not New Age. Okay, do we accept anything subtle? No. No. We don't see it with our senses. It doesn't exist, basically. You know, or if science has said that, yes, there's a vitamin there, I accept that. You know, okay, this pill represents a vitamin, therefore taking that, my health will be good. But it's only on the authority of scientists that I'm taking it. Right? But New Age, now that, anything goes. Anything subtle and this and that, and there's, you know, how you say, the forest goddesses and the elementals and, you know, the, how you say, the gods of Valhalla, you know, whatever it is that's your thing, you know, like that. So the astronomy, the, you know, the astrology, all these different things, not so much astronomy, more astrology. And these, then they're accepted, then those are cool. But all them originally was from the Vedic, but it's just not pious enough to accept them in their original form, so you accept them in this, this kind of, you know, transformed, you know, the yogurt form of the Vedic culture. You know, because it matches more the passion and ignorance. So that's then what happens. But it's the same disease. And then some are in that just because that's what they are. They don't know. And so as soon as they come in contact with what's proper, then they'll try to make the adjustment. You know, they'll be a bit more sentimental, but they'll try to make the adjustment. But then there are those who identify with this, and this is their status within the process. So for them, this will be a big stumbling block. Does that make sense? Because it's there. It's a real thing that you have to deal with. Does that make sense? Krishna left the rasa dance because of this point. Because the gopis thought they were special. So he left. Right, and went off with Radharani because she has the right attitude. Does that make sense? So when they accepted that they're not supreme, and they're not the special one, you know, because they're accepting Krishna, but they're not accepting Radharani. But because the point is that when it accepts Krishna as the supreme, yes, that's a higher position. That's a high position, but understanding the devotee's position. And having faith in the devotees, that's a higher position. So they have to develop that. They develop that, what do you call it? Yeah, can't remember what the names are. But, yeah. Okay, does that make sense? So then it moves forward. So you have to get, so the earlier you start working on it, the better. Because if you leave it for later, then it will be a problem. Yeah.
And how you work on it?
By being aware it's there and being aware that it's not good. And so whenever you see it, then you try to, what would be the better way of dealing? Yeah.
Can we say that to preach about the importance not to have demigod worship is a way to be more convince ourselves?
Yes, also. That's also when it comes up. If you're dealing with people that don't deal, then it's there. But if it does come up, then it comes. Then it's mentioned. Like if you're traveling and preaching, and you don't bump into anybody that has that problem. You don't need to bring it up. But if you see that you hear about and one yatra or some devotee or this or that is doing that, then you bring it up in the class. You know, in an indirect way. You talk about the Hindus, so you're talking about that guy sitting right there. You know. And depending upon how they're reacting, then you put more pressure or less, or how everybody else is reacting. Yeah.
Can you see that in the measure of the reaction? Because we also see how Nanda Baba, he reacted to what Krishna said, and how Indra, he reacted to what Krishna did, and we see them.
Yeah. When Nanda Baba reacted, he was making the point of Vedanta. So what Nanda Baba, his response was actually correct. Mm-hmm. But Krishna doesn't want to take that forward, otherwise then he becomes the supreme. Mm-hmm. So therefore he goes back and uses other aspects. So I think he countered that with Shankya. Mm-hmm. You know, but the point is because they have affection for Krishna, and that logical presentation, then they're going to go. But by using Karma Mimamsa and Shankya, he established actual Vedanta. But it's just as Govardhan Hill, and that he's not different from Govardhan Hill. But the emphasis is not on that aspect.
Maharaj, the theory that some devotees have is that we wanted some material possessions. We spent 10 years worshipping Krishna. He did not give, now go to Lord Shiva. Not for the bhakti, but for that particular thing, Ganpati, for that particular thing. And we are devotees.
And we are what is the we are devotees got to do with we have a material desire we're trying to fulfill? I didn't catch that part.
For Grihastha Ashram, for having some practical facilities.
What about the concept that maybe you're not supposed to get that? You don't have the karma for it? Because you have to remember, the more you function on the platform of I want material things, the more you're looking at, well, what is your material qualification for that? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, let's say you have a kid who flunks out of first grade. You know, he flunks out of every year that he goes through. You know, so by the time, okay, now he's 25 or 30, he finally graduates from high school. Is he going to be a nuclear physicist? A neurobrain surgeon? No. You understand? But what if he's this? No, I have to be that. And so, you know, I've gone through this normal, you know, school system for all this time, and they couldn't make me into that. So now I'll just look on the internet and make myself. You know, and they will think that they're really, really advanced by what they learned on the internet. You see it all the time, right? You know, it's like you talk to anybody. Everybody's a doctor. Right? Where? From the internet, you know. And you bring up one thing and they'll say, yeah, 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 this. You bring up the opposite. Yeah, 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 this. You know, it's just, you know, they don't even catch it. So that's the whole point, is that what about the karma? You're saying, I worship Krishna for 10 years. So if you just worship Krishna for material benefit, then make it clear to Krishna that's all you're doing. Then maybe you'll get your benefit. But Krishna, it may be that you're following and practicing within the society. There's kind of the illusion that maybe you're interested in pure devotional service. So by getting those material desires, will you stick around or will you leave? Because you've already partly left worship of Krishna to worship the demigods. But that worship that you would do for Krishna, now that's gotten less. Now you're worshiping demigods. So you're already leaving Krishna. So then if you get the desire, will they stick around? So you can't say, but they're working on the principle that I deserve this. I want it, I deserve it. But maybe you want it, but you don't deserve it. Right? Remember, in samsara, there's the where are you getting the nice facilities, let's say from 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock, if we look at the cycle of samsara as, you know, from that. So from 9 to 3, that means you have facility. Right? From 3 to 9, that means they're lacking facility. Right? But we see is from 9 to 12, they're gaining, but from 12 to 3, they're losing. So that means the person in 9 to 12 is desiring and getting because of their proper performance of karma. But the ones from 12 to 3, that is, they want, but they're not doing the proper thing, so they're losing. So how do they know, according to karma, they're not on the 12 to 3 part, or from the 3 to 6 part? You know what I'm saying? And if they say, no, but in devotional service, this, that, okay, if that's why you join, make it clear to Krishna that's what you want. Because Bhagavatam says that's the way it goes. Bhagavatam never says worship demigods. He says you're a fool if you worship a demigod. So if you're a fool, that means it's not a good thing. Right? What fools do is generally not considered good. You know, it's just a standard thing. You know? Does that make sense? Even on a non-Vedic consideration or non-spiritual, then they all accept. Every culture expects what idiots do, that you don't do. Right? What the village idiot is doing, you do not do that. Right? Is that what I'm saying? Yeah, so it's all just misplaced material desires, and then they just do what they want. Because the point is then make it clear to Krishna, this is what you want. You know, but the point is it's up to Krishna to do it, because even the demigod you know, he still has to ask Krishna for it. But you've gone to the demigods and this and that, then it's more materialistic, then you get it. But you won't be able to use it in Krishna's service, so what's the advantage of having it? Being material, it will bind you, so it may take you away from Krishna. So why would you want for something from a demigod? Right? Because it will bind you. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you know, you get something from the Supreme, then you get some benefit, you move forward. You get a ring from Sauron, it doesn't work out good. You understand? It's just, you don't do it. It binds you. It even says on the ring. You know? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, so you got to be stupid. So that's why they're saying they're fools. Doesn't mean that they don't have a PhD and don't have, you know, super memory and intelligence, but they don't know how to use it. You know what I'm saying? You get the punk, you know, rich kid, you know, he's got the fancy car, doesn't know how to drive it. Everyone thinks he's an idiot. He's a rich idiot, but he's an idiot. You know what I'm saying? Because these guys, they always crash the car, always do something stupid with it. Because they're idiots. So that's the whole point, is that we have to be very, very careful, is that the acharyas give this, it's a razor's edge, you know, and if you're off wading off into the right, you know, side or the left side, then, you know, Krishna's on the edge, not over that way or over this way, you know. Is that something? Okay, good.
Not about demigods.
On the?
Not about demigods.
Not about demigods. Why, what's wrong with demigods?
You know, when we have Pitru Dosh and all.
When we have Pitru
Dosh. Yeah, Pitru Dosh. So then devotees, it's called devotees, Hindu devotees. They go for the removal of the Pitru Dosh so that they advance in bhakti, because the Pitru is unhappy.
The Pitri Dosh. But who is the original Pitri? Who's the Pita Maha?
Krishna.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's a good chance that the IRS is not happy with them either. So, you know, how far are they going to take this?
Now, what's the Pitri Dosh?
Pitri Dosh, as far as I would, from my understanding, as was explained by somebody, then it's the specific recipe of doses that was given by the forefathers. So then that one you get, because it's better than the one that you make up or these instant ones and stuff. You know, if you just use Eno, it's not so good. But if you actually take it fermented overnight and that, then you get a good dosa.
They're not giving this to
Krishna. It means that there's something with the forefathers and all that. So then they deal with that. It's one of those you can do if that's the tradition. It's not a big deal and all that. But if you're not from that tradition, why would you ever do it? And the ones we're talking about now, much of them, we're not talking about those born in practicing Hindu families, that they would be doing panchopasana as part of their worship as a daily thing. We're talking about, you know, how you say, malechas and yavanas, that, you know, you have to go out with the, what do you call it? The paint scraper? Is that what it's called? It's a wooden handle with this big wide thing on the front that you use to scrape the paint off. Right? Yeah, it's like a spatula, like that, but it's especially, you know, it's very hard, and it's like that, and the edge is sharp. And you go out there, and you go in, you have the street, and where the street meets the curb, that's called the gutter. You go there and scrape. That's where you get the devotees from in the West, right? Because that's where the culture is. It's in the gutter. And so then they're going to take up panchopasana worship. It's going to take up all their consciousness. You know what I'm saying? So there's no need. But someone who grew up in a smarta family, they do panchopasana, it doesn't take up any consciousness because they don't have any anyway. So you know what I'm saying? So it's not going to be a distraction. So if they come from families where they do all these kind of things, and they do it, or the family does it for them, then it's not a problem. But if they're devotees and that, that's, I wouldn't worry about it. They just worship Krishna's taken care of. You know? Like that. Because it's you're talking about a spiritual thing, so there's no need to do.
Because the pujari himself is a ISKCON brahmachari.
That's another thing. We don't have to get technical details to point out that this it's this guy or that guy.
Because how can then brahmacharis who are in proper knowledge, you know?
Yeah, but why would the brahmachari be doing? Because the point is grihasthas do these pujas. Brahmacharis can do the pancharatrik pujas, but when you get into the Vedic, you have to be a grihastha. Like that. You know, it's just, you know, why would we take that one thing of doing the Pitri Puja, but the guy who's doing it's not a grihastha? Right? In other words, he's a Brahmin, who that's his lifestyle, he does these things. He happens to be a devotee, but that's what he does as an occupation, you know. And so, therefore, if he does these things for other grihasthas, then you're okay. Because their purpose is to please Krishna. So, yes, it could be there, but it's not necessary. Right? Because I don't think other family members who are not devotees are pushing for it. Right? Now, if you have in your chart that someone you'll have two marriages, and so therefore then you first marry a banana tree and then somehow or another the relatives they don't somehow or another they never deal nicely with this banana tree. I don't know what it is. They always take it over to the side and let them know, you know, what their inner feelings are and stuff like that. So that's because you're dealing on a material platform here. So in other words, you're dealing with the religion and then how to use that in Krishna's service. But if you're talking about just being engaged in Krishna's service, why would this other thing be a problem? But if it is, a grihastha devotee, who that is his lifestyle, you know, his livelihood, and that he does it according to the principles based on Krishna consciousness as given by the acharyas, then you could do. But otherwise, for us, what's the need? Right? The acharyas already saved us from all that kind of stuff. Because if they want to actually please the demigods, I mean please the pitris, then that's really, really serious. And guaranteed the pitris won't accept an offering from a brahmachari. You have to be a grihastha. You know, if you're the pujari and stuff like that. You know, you're yajaman, okay, you're young, not married, you're doing the pitri puja for your father. But the Brahmin has to be highly qualified, more than a demigod worshiper. A demigod worshiper can be of a lower qualification. But pitri worship, unless they're of the topmost, then they're not allowed. So, to me, is what's the need of all this? Because they're not following anyway. I'm not saying the brahmachari is not a qualified person, but the point is why would this be the necessity? And pitri dosha is the only dosha that's there in the chart. I'm sure you can go and there's tons of them. You know, someone who knows can go down and probably find hundreds of yogas that are there, and some of them are good, some of them are bad. You know what I'm saying? So. No one's ever mentioned that that's of any importance. You know what I'm saying? You know. But if it's something that's there and so then it's done, the kid's got it, so the parents do puja for the kid when they're small, because it's just part of the family scene. It happens. But they'll move on. They will be not focusing on it. But if it's focusing on that, then that's taking away from Krishna consciousness. Like I said, the Westerner who takes up Panchupasana worship will be thinking of that more than Krishna. And he will be thinking he's in a superior position. He's actually, he's got the inside track. And the other guys are, you know, that's sentimental, you know. That's the way it is. Anytime we take something outside the Sampradaya, then that's what you end up with. You always end up with, I am supreme, I am worshipable. Because they go together.
In a properly functioning country, you cannot give any gift to government officer. It's illegal. Like
yes.
Even, like I said, if you want to sign a paper, you bring prasad. Even like in Latvia, you cannot give anything whatsoever to the government. You can give to doctor, you can give to teacher some gift like this, but not when government officer. It's written in all the offices.
Yeah. No, that's there. That's there. But you can still be nice.
Yeah.
because that's what they'll judge. You're nice to him, you did all your work, you signed you.
But it's a petitioning demigod for something, giving some gift to demigod, because he will give something else, but it's not like that.
Yeah. But that's also how many countries are like that. Mm-hmm. You could probably list them on one, maximum two hands. All the other 190 then gifts are great. In fact, they expect. Like we just had, you notice, I don't know if you've noticed, that there's no tractors running around for the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
They're quiet as anything. Because the police have seized all the tractors. Right? Because they're supposed to, I mean, whether it's actually a government rule or not, when they move dirt from one place to another, they're actually expected to pay a duty.
Okay.
They're not paying. And so whether the police made that up or whether it's actually a government thing, so then because they're not paying and they don't want to pay, the government took everything. If it moves, if it moves dirt, you know, even the guys, things that dig the dirt, JCBs, they took all those. So now,
How long?
That is until they start paying. I mean, one guy I know, for him to get his stuff back, he'll have to pay 50,000 rupees to get his stuff back. No, and he's got a lot of stuff, so. You know, so. Yeah, so. Over here, the example works really well.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And you just thought it's just, oh, nice. You know, so.
Moment, quiet moment.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, we could be paying the police to keep them.
That's why I checked how much.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, because those guys will give more, so. Yeah. Okay.
Should worship those who came up with the idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The local police chief, right. Indra continued. Their taking shelter of Krishna is just like the foolish attempt of men. Oh, Indra continued. Their taking shelter of Krishna is just like the foolish attempt of men who abandon transcendental knowledge of the self and instead try to cross over the great ocean of material existence in the false boats of fruit of ritual sacrifices. So it's not that what he's saying here is not correct. He's just using it to support his incorrect position. Right?
We're dealing with Purusharta Prakarta swapping.
Swapping, yes. That we're switching them. Because this point that he makes is very correct, but what he doesn't understand is he's the one that's trying to do that. Because by the next thing, these coward men have acted inimically towards me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being. So he's taking, I'm the demigod, he's an ordinary human being. So just as someone takes care of this transcendental, then he goes over by going with fruit of and ritual sacrifices, drop down to the lower level of position. But he doesn't understand is that what he's doing is that he's trying to keep them from going to the higher. So it's actually the opposite. Okay. The coward men have acted inimically towards me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna, who thinks himself very wise, but who is simply a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative child. Right? So this, I am supreme, I am worshipable. He's attributing that to Krishna, and it's actually himself. Like that. So,
like that. Example,
no, it's not so much that he's against Krishna. He doesn't know that this is Krishna, or won't take that this is Krishna, or appreciate this is Krishna. So it's not exactly that wouldn't be the right example. I'd say his example is right. It's just he shifted it. So therefore, he's taken what's the primary thing, and made the secondary the prominent. Right, because the Purusharta is what is actually you're trying to do. The Kratvartha is what helps you attain that. You know, it's just like cooking is the Purusharta, and the pots and pans are the Kratvartha. So he's made the pots and pans the Purusharta, and the cooking not, because he thinks that there's no cooking going on. Yeah, he doesn't understand that they're actually worshipping Krishna. Yeah. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 5 to Bhagavad Arkamrithimala, chapter 19, entitled Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Gadima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Right, so they've taken shelter, they've given up worship of the demigods, they've taken shelter of Krishna, you know, because of their love for him. So that's one of the aspects of the dimensions of love for Krishna, is one's willing to give up anything material to please Krishna. And so the Brajabasis have done that. But here, then the Indra is finding fault in that because he doesn't know that they've given up the material, which means worship of him, for the spiritual, which is Krishna. So he's reversing the process here. The BBT purport states, according to Srila Sridhar Swami, through the insults of Indra, goddess Saraswati is actually praising Krishna. The Acharya explains, Vachalam means one who can speak according to Vedic authority. Balisham means free from pretension, just like a child. Stubdham means that he bows down to no one because there is no one for him to offer homage to. Agyam means that there is nothing more for him to know because he is omniscient. Pandita Maninam means that he is highly honored by the knowers of the absolute truth. And Krishnam means he is the supreme absolute truth, whose transcendental form is full of eternity and ecstasy. Martyam means that although he is the absolute truth, he nevertheless appears in this world as a human being out of affection for his devotees. So, in this way, because now here's an aspect Sridhar Swami is bringing out, because the discussion came up some days ago about how these are prayers, you know, and whether the person knows it, but it's just playing the part, you know, that they're saying all these nasty things and then there's a little wink on the side and like that kind of a thing. But here's bringing out the aspect is that no, he's saying this because he thinks like this. Right, just like Shishupal says all those things because he thinks like that. But now he's going to speak. Right? Now is the jiva in control of the potency of speech? No, it's one of Krishna's potencies. Right? So Saraswati. And so when you're dealing with Krishna, then it's in connection there. And so then the goddess Saraswati, or Divya Saraswati, then she arranges that the words he uses actually are in glorification, but the person using them thinks that they are insulting. So the Acharyas then, being in line with pleasing Krishna, then are able to see the praise that Saraswati Devi has arranged. Right? Because different words come up. Right? When you're trying to say something, yes.
So in this case, this Krishna hearing what Saraswati says or what the person says.
The point is you hear the one, you know, and so that's appreciated from what Saraswati's arranged, but at the same time you hear how they think they're saying it, so that you reciprocate with them according to their. So he's reciprocating with both at once. So he's appreciating the one, but you know, like Shishupal. 100 praises, why would he get his head cut off? Because he didn't think they were praises. You know, he thought they were insults, and so therefore he got his head cut off. But it's not that he doesn't appreciate, like we see the Acharyas bring out. Oh, Krishna, you know, who is this Krishna? He has no varna. You know, because, you know, in Braj he's a cowherd boy, in Dwarka he's this and this, and, you know, now he's driving a chariot, you know, it's just like this. So then like that. But that's that. But the glorification, that's Krishna's position. He's beyond. He's the source of these positions. So he's transcendental to these and unaffected by these. Right? So therefore then, it's another thing, because yesterday they told me they put those Elmiras in the door. And I was thinking, that's definitely not in any door. But it's the door in the gate, they put it through the door in the wall. Because I've been thinking, how is that in the door? Because I was looking for them over in that building, looking for them in this building, and there they are. Okay. So he reciprocates with both. He accepts the worship of that, and the Acharyas appreciate that. But at the same time, they appreciate how Krishna dealt with Shishupal, who had that inimical mood, or with Indra, who had that inimical mood. So both can go on at once. It's like when Krishna walks into Nectar Devotion mentions, when he comes into the assembly, you know, all the Brajbasis, then with all the different Brajbasis, they're all seeing him differently, and he's reciprocating differently. So he, as the omniscient one, as mentioned, is one of the glories, then sees everything. But he reciprocates with everyone according to the standard of human interaction. And they deal with him in that same way. So,
Maharaj, so then earlier we discussed that how every verse, you know, has direct, indirect, and hidden meaning. So this is how the acharyas are trying to get out the hidden meaning.
The hidden meaning. No, it's not they're trying to get out, it's there. It's not that they're taking it and squeezing it and, you know, running it through a, you know, the vice thing and putting it in the blender and beating on it a while and, you know, no, it's just that it is there because Saraswati arranged it that way. But the words can also be mean done the other way. So actually it means this, but the person thinks he's saying that. So actually the person saying it's using the indirect. But what it actually is glorification of Krishna. But they don't know, so they take part. They take part in that way.
Glorification of Krishna is direct, what is said over here, and what the person Indra actually means is indirect.
Yes, but the Indra, he's being direct.
Yeah, he's being direct.
Yes, but that's what illusion does. It makes you think right is wrong and wrong is right. Mm-hmm. So. Does that make sense?
So much. So Saraswati is a pure devotee of Krishna.
She is the wife of Vishnu.
Vishnu, yes.
So she's one of the you know, the consorts of Vishnu.
So can we say it is one of her service to help people who are not very advanced to become more Krishna conscious by
the proper words? Yeah, could be. Like that. I'm sure she's that. But point is that she does. So since it's a connection with Krishna, she'll get involved. If it's on the material platform, then her expansion as the material Saraswati, who is Brahma's wife, then she'll take care of all that. So,
there is plenty of persons who are influencing us.
Yes, so we think we're this. That's the problem. We think we're the supreme. We're doing everything, but it's like everything. Even to blink your eyelids, there's a demigod there, and, you know, sitting there. And I don't know how they do it. They have a lever. They have a button. They go on and blink.
It's like playing video games.
Huh?
Like playing video games.
Yeah. You know, like that. But it's just, so. You think of the potency you have to have. You're controlling the eyelids of everybody in the universe.
Yeah, you just have to blink yourself.
Yeah, but then everybody blinks at once. But then on Brahmaloka, that's going to be the demigods don't blink, so you don't have to worry about them.
Oh.
Okay, yeah, so then in those high time frames. Because otherwise, if Brahma was blinking as much as was blinking here, then, or if we blinked how they would blink, your eyes would get pretty dry. But, you know, yeah. So it's just Krishna's potency. So it's worked out. To the clouds of destruction, Indra said, "The prosperity of these people has made them mad with pride." Right? Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, he's just speaking his own problem. Like that. And their arrogance is backed up by Krishna. "Now go and remove their pride and bring their animals to destruction." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. It is indicated here that in the villages or outside the towns, the inhabitants must depend on the cows for their prosperity. When the cows are destroyed, the people are destitute of all kinds of opulences. When King Indra ordered the Samvartika and companion clouds to go to Vrindavan, the clouds were afraid of doing this mischief. But Indra assured them, "You go ahead and I will also go, riding on my elephant, accompanied by great storms, and I shall apply all my strength to punishing the inhabitants of Vrindavan." The BBT purport states, "It is clear from this verse that the residents of Vrindavan had become highly prosperous simply by protecting cows, since Indra wanted to destroy their so-called pride based on wealth by killing their animals. Well-tended cows produce large quantities of milk, from which come cheese, butter, yogurt, ghee, and so on. These foods are delicious by themselves and also enhance other foods, such as fruits, vegetables, and grains. Bread and vegetables are delicious with butter, and fruit is especially appetizing when mixed with cream or yogurt. Dairy products are always desirable in civilized society, and the surplus can be traded for many valuable commodities. Thus, simply by a Vedic dairy enterprise, the residents of Vrindavan were healthy, wealthy, and happy. And even in the material sense, and most of all, they were eternal associates of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Right? So the whole thing is dairy is the main thing. Then it's dairy with grains, dairy with vegetables, dairy with fruits, right? And then you have sugar. That's what you add in accordingly. You understand? So dairy is the common thing, right? The fruits, the vegetables, the grains aren't the common things. Dairy is what's in everything. So you actually see in the human diet, dairy is actually the central feature. Like that. Yes.
Sounds that even for Indra, what he wants to do with the residents of Vrindavan is out of proportion.
Yes. Yes.
They just didn't do puja, and he wants to destroy them.
Yeah. No, it's just you can see as he's already proud. If it was probably a normal time, then he would just think this is, you know, and then stop rain or, you know, do something like that. But because he's already proud and Krishna wants to invoke his anger to then deal with it, then we see it's so extreme. So, because the point is now if somebody's in control of something, can he get out of hand? Right? The office clerk, you know, generally doesn't get too out of it, and if he does snap, generally, you know, he might throw his, how you say, his keyboard, you know, like that, or, you know, maybe toss a chair or something, or push somebody over, you know, like, you know, that's about it. You know, but the higher up they go, the more wild it becomes. So Indra is, you could say, the top of the managers in the universe. Those who do administration, who consider themselves managers, he's the top guy, because above him, then you have the Prajapatis, the sages, and all that. They'll identify as Brahmins. Right? They may be in the Kshatriya element, but the point is they're on that, that the mode of goodness is so much more. So you won't have this kind of thing. So he is as high as you can get to have this kind of power and be interested in sense gratification, because above them, why? There's no problem. They're not interested in sense gratification. But they may get distracted, but they're not interested. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, his reaction, you can see, would be the greatest. And Krishna knows how to do it exactly, just to, you know, poke in the right place. Right? Because his potency comes from Krishna. So if anybody wants to poke, no one knows better. Because the position of Indra comes from Krishna. So he knows the potency. He knows how they think. He knows everything. In fact, if there's no Indra, he'll do it. So if Krishna wants to get him, you know, agitated, then he knows exactly how to do it. So,
but if we see from the devotional side, Krishna is a and Indra is a Kanishtha Adhikari, and he wants to destroy, you know, Krishna's associates.
But he doesn't understand that who they are. That's the whole point. He thinks Krishna's an ordinary boy, therefore the Brajbasis are also just ordinary village people. He doesn't see any of that. And when it comes to retribution, who's most into retribution? The Kanistas, the Madhyams, or the Uttamas? Kanistas. So therefore, as the head honcho Kanista in the universe, you know, who has the power to do whatever he basically likes, then if he gets off the rails, he really gets off the rails. Even like it said, even the Samvartika clouds knew this is not good. But Indra's there, and they don't want to, because, you know, they don't want problems. So, does this work yet, or?
It's a serious offense.
It is. That's why it's here in Krishna book. It's serious. You know. You know, so this is not a slap on the wrist offense. This is a, you know. Yeah. Yes.
I'm just thinking probably the difficulty for us is that from the modern concept of justice, we think because he's so far off, then he should be dealt with permanently, completely removed, completely
Yeah, that's the other condition. He's thinking his reaction is there, but then how Krishna deals with them, then we see also. So that's the thing, is in the Vedic, even though things go way out of hand, if they can be corrected, then everything's dropped. If it can't, so as long as the problem's there, you apply the correction. But as soon as it's corrected, you stop. But in the modern, no, it's you know, it's eternal, even though nothing's eternal, and their position is not eternal. But you know, it's just how it works.
Right.
Yes.
Even though it's dropped, but Krishna, Indra is reminded sometimes of his offenses.
That's there. It's just like every time he looks in a mirror, there, you know, he'll notice the offenses. You know. But, so it means depending upon what it is and it has. So Indra always has that, you know, 1,000 eyes. It's just the way it is. How he gets them is different every time, but basically it's the same kind of category. Okay. Yes?
Whereas in the beginning of 10th canto, we see the demigods have approached the Lord to save the boy. Now how that he's forgetting that and thinking Krishna to be only the boy?
That's the modes of nature. Means you have to rise above the modes of nature, right? Through your serious practice of Krishna consciousness. So Indra has allowed himself to get distracted from Krishna consciousness. He may be doing his duties nicely, but he's distracted from Krishna consciousness. So just doing your duties nicely is not enough. Right? You have to be Krishna conscious. Okay. Plus, you have to remember that was in Mathura. So it's within the realm of Vaikuntha. So there they see him as Paramatma. So Paramatma, how does he always behave? Does Paramatma ever behave in human pastimes or always in God pastimes? Yes, yeah, so now these are human pastimes. So he doesn't have the realization on that level. You understand? He only has realization of up to the Vaikuntha level. Right? So because you can say is, oh, but in the Upanishads he's giving such nice high levels of realization, but that's on the Brahman and Paramatma level. Right? So, and they're very advanced. But the point is you have to be able to appreciate the Bhagavan platform, where it's just doing things because that's how Krishna likes to do it. And so Krishna likes to do the pastime like this. How else is he? If it's a regular day in the village, how do you just spend 24/7 with everybody, you know, without anybody going away? No eating, no sleeping, no one gets tired, no one gets hungry, no one gets thirsty. It would be mystical, no? But it's raining and you all hide under the umbrella and it happens to rain straight for 7 days, so therefore you're just there under there, then it works out nicely. Right? Because as long as it's raining, you don't do anything else. So as long as it rains for 7 days, they don't have to do anything else. So you see, he solves it very nicely in a human-like way. You know, but befitting his position. So the umbrella happens to be Govardhan Hill. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the position.
Maharaj, here it mentions that Indra is saying that they have pride and arrogance.
Yes.
So he's finding some kind of mistakes in Krishna and the Brajvasis. So does it mean that just because I have a particular misgiving and that's the reason why I'm able to see it in others?
How will you perceive something that you don't have the ability to perceive?
I will not perceive if I don't have.
No, it's just like, now let's say we have a good, you know, practical businessman, and he walks into any scenario, can he see ways to make money?
Yes.
But the place is full of people in that same scenario, do they see the opportunity to make money?
No.
Not at all. You understand? Mm-hmm. So that's the thing, what you see. Someone sees, let's see, aesthetics. They walk into a situation, they can see what is aesthetic or how to make it aesthetic. Others don't. They think the pizza boxes on the coffee table are fine. you know, because there's still a few pieces left, right? You know, because they ordered three different pizzas, and so they, you know, I mean, you could put whatever's left in one box and leave it there, but why bother? Because then you have to throw away the boxes twice. You just leave it until everything's finished and throw away all three boxes. Practical, right? Mm. You know, so they don't see. You understand? So it is practical to see that side. You understand? So whatever you see, that's what you have. You can't see something you don't have. Now the question is what you see, do you have it in a purified state or an unpurified state? So he's seeing all these bad qualities because he has these bad qualities. But let's say someone like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, now, he had the bad quality of impersonalism, but then he's purified and come above that. Now he can see the weakness of impersonalism in so many places. Mm-hmm. But he's speaking from a purified state. Mm-hmm. Because if it's purified, then you'll be how to bring it up. If it's from the impurified, you think that you're superior and they're inferior, they must be punished. Right, but if it's actually in a superior position, they're there because of not a good understanding, or so therefore you're trying to how to bring them up. That's how you tell the difference. Does the retribution improve their Krishna consciousness, or is it just retribution because that's what's just? So when Krishna consciousness isn't considered in the retribution, then you're talking about someone who has that fault themselves. And if they're talking about, you know, it's just like, remember before, it was one of the things once, Lokanath Maharaj was doing the Padayatra. When did he start that?
Early
80s. So, you know, once it got going in that, it was a common thing that, let's say, someone got really off the rails in their Krishna consciousness, that they would send them there for 3 months or 6 months just to be chanting, have good association, be in all that. Then after they finished that, then they would come back and take up their service again. Once they felt, you know, unless they, you know, found that they just wanted to stay on Padayatra or go out full-time preaching, like this. But they tried to raise the consciousness. Prabhupada was here, someone really go off, he would take them traveling with him to get association, to be involved in preaching, and, you know, stay out of other things that you could get distracted by the secondary aspects. Does that make sense? So that's because you're looking from a higher platform. This is not Krishna conscious. You have to be Krishna conscious and this and that. So it's wrong. Why? Because it's not Krishna conscious. But if it's a matter of this is wrong, and because it's wrong, we're not talking Krishna consciousness here, it's wrong, therefore there must be this retribution. Now, if I can find a Shastra coat to back up that it's wrong, then even better. Because now everyone will leave me alone and not notice that actually it's just mundane retribution. Because that's why it says that, you know, the elephant bath, what's the point? You purify yourself and that's there. So unless you've purified the heart, that mistake will remain. So by retribution does not purify anyone's heart. It never has, never will. Shastra says, the book on retribution says it will never purify it. You know what I'm saying? But, you know.
It's hope against hope.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Does that make sense? So you have to just see yourself. In other words, if you're seeing something so wrong, you have to look into yourself, do I have that also? And see that is coming from a Krishna conscious position. So you're bringing out a Krishna conscious, resolution. Or is it that is just retribution?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Or fault finding? Because if you can't do anything about it, it's fault finding. You know? Because one has to remember is that the, what do you call it? Ultra crepidian. You know ultra crepidian?
No.
Right? Ultra crepidian is defined as someone who doesn't have a qualification in a particular area, but they have very strong opinions, guidance, what should be done, everything like that. Right? You know, like our typical, the guys down at the pub, working out what the guy should have done in the footy match. You know, why did he do that? He should have, you know, brought the ball around here, or that, or all the you know, the political stuff. Yeah, the president should have done this, and that should have done that. And, right? These are ultra crepidians. Right. So, therefore, you know that they have all the faults that they're talking about. Right? So, in that case, then the natural response is when they make all those points of fault, where actually they're their own faults, then the traditional, uttara, or counter to that is, it takes one to know one. Because that's the actual position. Yes.
There's a quote of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur that if you see a fault in another person, it becomes three times in yourself. So many times we see some improvements to be made in the society, in our temple or some.
But is it your business? Is it in the context of your ability and duties to deal with it?
Sometimes.
If it is, then you can make that effort. If you just find the fault and do nothing, what's the point of finding the fault? And if you find the fault and it's not your ability or area to work in, then again, it's the same problem. So if you find a fault in an area that you can improve, then you correct that. But you also have to correct it with the idea of making the person more Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, just correcting it without actually correcting the Krishna conscious point then doesn't actually improve the environment. Is that? Okay. King Indra continues after the break. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samyak Vaitha Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainataya Gaura Premanaki.